This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, the Hockey News Podcast is here. It is July 1st, 2019. We're here in the Hockey News office. It's Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy and Ken Campbell. And you know what? I kind of like doing this stuff July 1st. I know it's a holiday here in Canada, but if I'm being honest with myself, fellas, every July 1st before I worked for the Hockey News, I was just sneaking away from whatever barbecue I was at to check the TV and see who signed anyways, so may as well get paid for it. That's what I say.
Yeah, no, I'd rather be at the beach.
All right, well, I'm alone on that one. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Well, let's jump into the news. It's been an eventful day, maybe for not the reasons we were expecting, but the biggest news of the day, we're at the time of recording this podcast, is an offer sheet. There was a unicorn spotted, aka an offer sheet. Sebastian Aho, the Montreal Canadiens. It's a 5-year deal, $42.5 million, $8.45 million AAV. And the compensation would be a first, second, and third round pick in 2020. My mind's pretty blown. I did not think we'd see one. And I mean, at the time of recording this, I don't think we're going to see Sebastian Aho wearing a Montreal Canadiens sweater, even though he signed it. But let's talk about it. Do you guys think there's any chance that happens, or was the offer too low and too easy to match?
Yeah, I think it was both of those things. I think the general prevailing thought is they should have gone up one level to the $10.5 million. And then it would have been two firsts, a second, and a third. And then now you're getting into, and you know, if you structure it with, you know, really front loaded with lots of bonus money, then you start to make it a little more difficult for them to match. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about Tom Dundon here, who paid $250 million to not watch a football league get started. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
I wish I had $250 million of not watch a football league get started money.
So I really find it hard to believe that they wouldn't match this offer, even though they were coming in lower than this. I think they knew that this was possible. I think, you know, I mean, as far as a trade, first, second, and a third for Sebastian Aho, if you're Montreal, you make that trade in a minute, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, especially with all the picks that they have. And they're okay right now because they've had 20 picks in the last two drafts, and they have 12 more in 2020. So the picks are not going to be an issue for them, and they've got a good prospect line. So that's kind of why I would have maybe bumped it up to two firsts. And then, you know, I'm still not sure you don't match. But at least then you really give them something to think about.
Yeah, and it's kind of curious because if you look at it from Carolina's perspective, you know, 8.4, that's good for Sebastian Aho. And maybe they were trying to negotiate a little bit less. That's fine. I mean, that's how negotiations work. Don Waddell, you know, he had sort of a snap press conference there, and he alluded to the term wasn't what they would have preferred to go with. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, because it goes right into free agent. He's going to be a 27.
Yeah.
He's going to be a 27-year-old unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
And if he's really good, he's going to be what John Tavares was last
year. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, but you get 5 years of Sebastian Aho in his prime.
Right.
And so, yeah, you obviously match it. And it's kind of funny. I mean, the cap's going to go up. You know, again, that's a pretty good price for Sebastian Aho. And as you mentioned, Ken, it's like a first, a second, a third. Like, what are they going to do with that? Like, that's...
Yeah, like him at
that's not good enough.
Like,
so
Sebastian Aho at 8.45 AAV is, like, not even close to being outrageous. Like, that's a good deal.
Yeah, the only conspiracy theory I can think of is that Marc Bergevin made this offer sheet to open the floodgates for somebody else to make an offer sheet on Toronto's Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, we didn't do it. Somebody else did. Yeah. And then he doesn't have to actually, you know, he won't get Sebastian Aho. But, I mean, the Habs, Aho wasn't going to make them a Stanley Cup contender. He would make them better for sure.
Sure, yeah.
But this is a team that's not going to contend for anything for years, if at all. In Montreal, they'll be okay.
I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be really good in a few years.
I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. With Aho, I mean, then you're building around, you know, Nick Suzuki and Ryan Poehling. You're getting pretty strong. And Kotkaniemi, you're getting strong up the middle. But Cole Caulfield, the funny thing, Cole Caulfield as well, of course.
Who's on their defense?
Exactly. Yeah. That's fair. Sergeyev. No, never mind. But what's interesting to me about this is right now, you know, it's possible that while we're recording this podcast that the offer sheet gets matched, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So in a way, we might in a week be looking at Mark Bergevin saying this was a blunder, not a bold move, because you make an offer that's too low, it's probably going to get matched, and then Carolina has the ability to deliberately drag this out for a week, as Ryan, I think it was you saying this before we started recording, right. Mm-hmm. And make Montreal sweat, and during that time period, they're not going to be able to pursue any other acquisitions or moves, and maybe they could have offer-sheeted, say, Braden Point, had a better chance, but because this situation gets dragged out, you miss out on anything else, and in the end, you get nothing. Just, you made an offer sheet, it looked kind of bold and cool, but you've maybe damaged your relations. Other GMs are less likely to trust Mark Bergevin now, and you get nothing out of it, and you delay your ability to pursue other players for a week. So I wouldn't be surprised if it goes down as sort of a blunder.
It might, and I fully expect Carolina to match this. Fully expect.
Yeah. So now my question is the first domino, has it been cast now? And because we've seen one offer sheet, are we more likely now than we were 24 hours ago to see a bunch more offer sheets?
I don't think because of this one we're going to see them. I think we were more likely to see them now than we have been in the past. But I don't think this one, like, moves the goalposts or changes the playing field in any way. I don't think this is going to have any impact on Mitch Marner. I really don't. You know, but I do think that there was a more of a chance now than there has ever been for there to be an offer sheet, and we've seen one, so we know that.
Yeah.
Because every time we've seen an offer sheet in the past, it's like, okay, now we're going to start seeing them, and we don't. So I don't think this one changes the landscape in any way. I think the landscape had already kind of been moving in that direction anyways. Mm.
Though there is talk about teams sniffing around Kyle Connor in Winnipeg, and that one, that was something I didn't even think about because they also have Patrick Laine, who's obviously a bigger name. But you look at the Jets, and I guess they have a bit more space with Trouba gone and Tyler Myers gone, but that's kind of intriguing to think, like, ooh, could somebody make an offer to Kyle Connor that Winnipeg wouldn't be able to match simply because of other commitments that they need to make, i.e. with Patrick Laine, plus they already have a bunch of very good players under contract. You got to see how that sorts itself out too.
Right. And I think if Bergevin were to have an influence by making that offer sheet, the idea would be that, well, now teams are less afraid to do it because politically one guy did it. But when I was doing a lot of research for a story in our free agent magazine and I talked to some GMs about it, the prevailing thought, and you even heard it expressed from, I think, Bergevin and Waddell today, it was that most GMs, Brian Burke is the exception, but most GMs don't really take it personally. They understand it's a business.
Mm, sure.
And Kevin Lowe said this to me, and Bergevin said it today. It was very almost identical sentiment. It was, my first commitment is to the ownership of my own team and the fans of my own team. I'm going to do whatever it takes. Mm. So I don't think that because of Bergevin doing it, it's going to affect whether teams do it or not. Because
right.
Some people might say, oh, well, people are scared to do it because they don't want to hurt other GMs' feelings. I don't think that's really a thing anymore based on what I was told.
And Don Waddell will not be challenging Mark Bergevin to a barn fight because he would get his butt kicked for one person. But yeah, that won't be happening this time.
All right, so let's shift gears now to the actual unrestricted free agents, and let's talk a bit about the winners and losers. Let's start with the winners, and I'm going to throw at one that I think some people might argue is a loser, but I think it was the right fit for the right team. The Dallas Stars, they get two guys that are in their mid-30s, Joe Pavelski and Corey Perry, and I do think that for a lot of teams, that's not a kind of contract you want to chase, especially Joe Pavelski, 3 years coming off a very major head injury as well. But for Dallas, to me, this is a team that 2 years ago, they went all in on free agents. It didn't work out. Then finally this year, they get the progress, and they get to within one goal, overtime goal, of beating a team that won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
St. Louis Blues.
Yep.
I think there's no turning back for the Jim Neal era now. So, and both are relatively short-term contracts. I mean, Corey Perry is very short-term. It's 1 year with performance incentives. And Pavelski at 3 years, it's not long enough to really kill you.
No.
And I think Dallas, you know, they had some of the best goaltending in the league last year. They allowed the second fewest goals. You've got a great young defense core, Miro Heiskanen, Esa Lindell, John Klingberg. But the forward group, it's an older group, and that's established. And even though, you know, guys like Roope Hintz and Jason Dickinson progressed, I think it's fair to say that Dallas's draft history getting forwards has been pretty poor. If you look at Gurionov has not worked out so far.
Nichushkin just got bought out.
Yeah, Nichushkin bought out, and Scott Glennie, and the list goes on and on. So I think they're realizing, no, we're in our window now here. Jamie Benn's 29 years old. Radulov's 32. So I like Dallas recognizing that we are one of the only teams for whom this kind of move does make sense. Same goes for Corey Perry. So I actually like it for the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, well, and in a league where everything's trending younger, they're bucking the trend a little bit, and getting a little older. And I mean, I said last podcast or the one before that about Corey Perry, I think that he could be a real bargain signing. You know, especially at 1.5. You know, I mean, so you've got him at 1.5. You've got incentives that bring that can bring that up to. I think
it's 1.75 is the bonuses, so you would...
Yeah, so 3.25. So, and if he hits those, you're thrilled.
Sure.
If he's a complete bust and you both agree that this isn't working, you bury him in the minors and you're on the hook for $500,000. So very low risk.
Yeah, I liked the Andreas Sequeira pickup as well. Bought out by the Oilers and, you know, they were clearing cap space, I get that. But, you know, you talk about mobile defenseman, and Sakara has been banged up the past couple of years, but if he's healthy, then you got a guy that can, you know, be a pretty decent veteran defenseman. I thought Edmonton was better with him in the lineup than they were without him in the lineup. And when you have John Klingberg as your number one, when you have Miro Heiskanen, who could be a number one very soon, bring in Sakara, you know, it bolsters things. And all of a sudden, you've got some talent on all three pairings and you've got options as well. So I thought that was a sneaky little pickup too.
All right. So, Kenny, your turn. Let's hear your pick for the winner.
Well, again, I mean, you know, when you go to the trade deadline, usually the winner is the team that gets the best player that's available. And I think in free agency, it's the same thing. So I have to go with the New York Rangers. They got the best player out there. They got the crown jewel. And they got him. The thing that cements them as a winner is they got him for less than $12 million a year when other teams were willing to pay a lot more to keep him. Like, you know, I mean, obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets were willing to pay $12 million on 8 years. They got him for $12 million on 7. The Islanders were willing to give more money. So, I mean, when you look at that, and I mean, a first line of Mika Zibanejad between Kaapo Kakko and Artemi Panarin, that looks dynamic. Like, all of a sudden, the Rangers look really dynamic and exciting.
Jacob Trouba, Adam Fox, Kravtsov might make the team.
Yeah, exactly.
Elias Anderson might make the team. You never know.
Exactly. Yeah. So all of a sudden these guys now they got something. They got something going now, you know. And they're a player, and they'll be exciting to watch. I wonder how well they'll be able to keep the puck out of their own net, but they'll be fun to watch and they'll be dynamic. So yeah. So I think. Jeff Gorton has had a good run here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And it'll be interesting to see how quickly they can be good, because as excited as we get about all these young players, it's like Adam Fox has never played in the NHL.
Yes. No.
You know, Kravtsov has never played in the NHL. That's why I think this Panarin deal, it's crucial that it's a long-term deal where, you know, they might not make the playoffs this year because they don't quite come together yet and the defense is still trying to find its footing, things like that. But what you have is some really nice blue chippers, and then of course Panarin being the established guy and the go-to guy, where, you know, eventually you're going to move into a slightly different era of Rangers hockey. Like, you still have Lundqvist in net right now. You know, he's still the starter, but for how many more years? You know, you have Shesterkin coming over from Russia.
Georgiev.
You got Georgiev as well, so you got to make those decisions. You know, you have to look at the defense, like how long is Mark Stahl going to be on the team? You know, how long is Kevin Shattenkirk going to be on the team? Things like that. But they've set the table really nicely here. Mm-hmm. So as long as I think the fans are a little bit patient and just kind of enjoy the show next year, because I think they'll be a fun team.
They will.
I'm excited to watch them. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the key, is just like, let's just have everybody have fun out there. Yeah, let's not worry about results.
Did you do
right
your
away.
Best?
Yeah.
Did you work hard? Did you do your best?
Yeah. Was it 6-4 every night? Yes. Did we win them all? No. But it's okay.
That's right. Okay, Ryan, so who is your pick for the winning team?
I'm going to go with Florida. They got Panarin's buddy Sergei Bobrovsky in net. And that was the one where, you know, we kind of, we knew Bobrovsky was going to go to Florida. That seemed like the perfect fit. And we, you know, we thought Panarin would be there too, but obviously that didn't happen. But Bobrovsky was what they needed. And what I like about Florida's moves is, you know, they get Bobrovsky. He's the big ticket guy, $10 million. That's fine. He's turning 31, but he got to the NHL late. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have a lot of playoff hockey to play. So I feel like he's a young 31. Like, he'll be a young 31. Like, I think he's still got a lot of mileage on him. And if you look at goalies in the NHL, you know, Pekka still effective into his late 30s. You know, Roberto Luongo was effective up until last season where he struggled. And, of course, you know, he had injuries as well. But guys can be effective goaltenders in their mid to late 30s. So this is a deal where it's 7 years, but you'll probably get value in at least five of those years, if not seven. I mean, Bobrovsky might be that elite kind of guy where he's just a freak and he's still good mm-hmm. when he's 37, 38. Then they filled in. Anton Strahlman, that it's a depth move. You overpay.
They overpaid for him, but it's a good move. Yeah. It's a good move. It solidifies their back end.
Great experience. Yeah. He's been there, you know, he's been there before. He's been through the wars. Noel Achari, there's your bottom six guy that can be very effective. Brett Conley, that's kind of, you know, a guy who can be like a middle six winger and, you know, help out a bit. But what excites me is that Florida was on a good path to begin with. Barkov, Huberto, Trocheck, Hoffman, Dadonov, Ekblad and Yandel on defense. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they had the makings of it. Goaltending let them down last year. So you bring in Bob, who had a good playoff for the first time in his career. So that monkey is off his back. It feels like Florida would, you know, like, they're definitely a playoff team if everybody's healthy, particularly Trocheck. And that's what they need. They need to be relevant. They need to get back in there. They're in a tough division, but I think they can do it. Can they win a round? I mean, that's the next mission. I think it depends on who they match up with, obviously.
I still think they got to make the playoffs. I'm not convinced. I'm sorry, but I'm going to keep saying they won't make the playoffs until they actually do.
Right.
You know, don't get out of the gate 1-7.
Totally.
Don't go through December in last place and then have to make up so much space, okay?
Yeah.
So, like, get off to a good start first, and then we can start talking about this team being a playoff contender.
You know who got off to a bad start this past year was Sergei Bobrovsky.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was terrible at the beginning
of
the year.
But also keep in mind, Joel Quenneville is now their coach.
Right.
So you get a lot of calming influence. You got a guy that has literally done it all. And I think that's a big factor as well, is you have that authoritative voice. He's got the cup rings. You know, he has familiarity with some of the players already. I think that's going to really pull together, where if you do lose the first three games of the season, Quenneville says, all right, boys, let's just one step at a time here. Let's get it back on track. I think he's the kind of coach that can help them achieve those goals, because he's not going to get rattled by any situation, and he can focus them.
And I like the setup long-term for Bobrovsky, because Quenneville was a coach who was sort of ahead of the curve when it came to resting his goalies, and he really kept Corey Crawford fresh, backed up often. Well, it was Ray Emery for a while, but eventually it was Scott Darling and so on and so on. Whereas in Columbus, Bobrovsky had a very big workload. And earlier in his Blue Jackets career, he was getting hurt a lot. He lost 20 pounds. He's a very fitness-focused guy. He takes really good care of his body now, and is added to his flexibility, so he's been much more durable. And on top of that, you're going to have a coach that's probably going to be a lot more committed to giving him that rest and keeping him fresh for the playoffs. So I think it's a really good setup. And, of course, you have Florida, who drafted Spencer Knight in the first round. And now, with a two-time Vezina winner in your starter slot for almost, you know, close to the next decade, you can really slowly develop Spencer Knight. There's no obligation to rush him. And the Panthers have a lot of exciting other kids coming up. Henrik Borgstrom is now established as an NHLer, but you have Owen Tippett, you've got Heppo Niemi, and Gregory Denisenko is the other one, right? So I think even though they didn't get Panarin, the upside is they spent their money on, you know, Strahlman and Bobrovsky instead, and there is some really nice, exciting help, at least on paper, coming at forward.
And they needed Bobrovsky more than they needed Panarin. I mean, they can score.
Yes.
They can score. They have no problems with that. So Panarin might have even been negligible, right? Mm. Like, so he makes them stronger at something they're already really good at.
Fair. Yeah. Before we go to the losers, honorable mention, in my opinion, the San Jose Sharks, because I love that contract. Oh, wait, Steven, our producer, Steven, he's waving his
hand.
There's some kind of breaking news happening.
Anders Lee to the Islanders. Don't know what the deals are, but that's what the fourth period is saying.
Gotcha. Okay, so Anders Lee
sticking
returning.
With the Islanders.
So that sounds about right. It sounds like they were holding out and hoping they got Panarin, and if they didn't get Panarin, then it was Anders Lee was the fallback.
They knew Anders Lee wanted to be there because he's the captain, and you know, he's ensconced there. He wanted to come back.
Yeah, he's a big community guy.
Yeah.
He loves the culture there. You know, I was on Long Island a couple of months ago during the playoffs, talking to Lee, talking to Lamoriello, you know, talking to Lehner, who has not re-signed yet. Mm-hmm. We never know. But it really felt like Lee was definitely going to re-sign. It's funny, like, I assumed that, like, Eberle might be one who had only been there a short time and might use the UFA, but he signed, you know, early.
You know, there's a theory that, somebody said this on Twitter, there's a theory that money is only a factor up to $500,000, right? In changing jobs in any profession or whatever. After that it's all the intangibles. It's like what you know, where you want to live, where you want to raise your family, what kind of community you want to live in, all that other stuff. So now you look at Anders Lee's situation and it's like he went through all that crap for so long with the Islanders, and then now they finally start to turn the corner, and he's like, I don't want to leave now.
It's
just starting to get good again. Yeah. You know, it's just starting to get good here.
Yeah.
So that might have been a big part of it, too. I mean, it's pretty obvious he was pretty intent on wanting to stay.
Yeah.
You wonder if the relationship will be frayed at all, if he's sort of aware that he wasn't the first choice, but apparently it is repaired, because if he's going to sign, then he's probably happy. And from a PR standpoint, I've said this all week, that the Islanders, it would be just a disaster to lose a captain 2 years in a row. But wait, Steven has another update for us.
Anders Lee tweeted himself, so it does sound like it is happening, but he tweeted a clip from The Wolf of Wall Street that says, "I'm not leaving."
There
Ooh,
you go.
Ooh, okay. All right, well, thanks for that Wolf of Wall Street update. Okay, it's done. It's done. So that's good news for the Islanders. I don't think that either of us or any of us had the Islanders listed as our loser of free agency so far.
We did not.
So there you go. So let's move on to the losers now. Mine is the Minnesota Wild, because I don't understand what Paul Fenton is doing, if I'm being blunt about it, okay? Because
I don't understand.
Yeah. And this is a guy who's not been inspiring confidence. He literally talked about crying himself to sleep. He said that publicly this year, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And he made a couple moves at the deadline that suggested he was going in a certain direction. So you trade Charlie Coyle, you bring in Ryan Donato, you trade Michael Granlund, you bring in Kevin Fiala. So you're getting younger guys with more years of control. So it's okay. You're trending toward a rebuild. You're sort of being a pseudo seller. You missed the playoffs. That playoff streak of 6 years is over, and that's okay. You understand what you have. But then you go out and sign Matt Zuccarello for a 5-year deal at $6 million a year. It's going to pay him until he's 36 years old. And that doesn't fit what the Wild appeared to be doing. Mm-hmm. And it's not a knock on Matt Zuccarello at this stage of his career. He's an effective player.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has a couple good years left. But that's, to me, a contract that you sign if you're a Stanley Cup contender looking for a piece to put you over the top. Or a contender who's, you know, on the way out. Let's say a Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh had signed Matt Zuccarello, I would have said, okay, you know, they're giving the can one last kick.
Right,
they want
right.
a new winger for Malkin, whatever.
Right.
But Minnesota, if it was a 1 or 2 year deal, you'd say, okay, they can flip him if they miss the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it.
Maybe they're buffering against losing Jason Zucker. Which may happen. Not losing him.
But who's much younger, right?
Significantly
younger, so I just don't get it.
Yeah. Steven's got more.
Anders Lee, 7 years, $7 million per season.
Okay. Sounds about right.
Sounds like a great deal. That's a great deal.
Yeah.
All the guy does is score, and if he can keep doing that, it's going to look good for him. It's going to look good for the team.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I agree with you, Matt, on Minnesota. It's like, you might not even make the playoffs. Like, how is Matt Zuccarello going to help you if you don't even make it? Like, it makes them
older. He helped the New
older.
York Rangers not make the playoffs a few times, so.
And do you even want to make the playoffs right now for Minnesota when the Central has the defending cup champion, Colorado's on the rise, Dallas is loading up, Nashville has got Matt Duchene? It's like, it's not really the time to contend.
But
that's the weird thing. It's like, why do you want to, it's weird to say, why do you want to make the playoffs? But it's like, do you think you can win a round in the Central Division? Like, shouldn't you be rebuilding and, like, trying to get rid of, like, the Parise contract, the Suter contract, you know?
It's kind of weird because you see teams like this and what Vancouver's doing that I don't understand either.
Yeah.
And it's like you're trying to chase a playoff spot. Like, that's... And, you know, Okay.
St. Louis.
And then you win. No. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That happens once every 10 years or so, or maybe a little fewer than 10 years now. But, I mean, come on. That's not going to happen all the time.
You can't bank on that.
Yeah, you can't bank on that. It's not going to happen all the time. And I wonder about these teams that are just, that seem to be getting these veteran players in order to just kind of chase, just to be in the mushy middle.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what I call it. It's the mushy middle.
Totally. Analogy I always use, it's the guy who's in a poker tournament and you're just folding every hand because you just don't want to be the first out. So you're playing to stay in the game, stay in the game, but you're never making big bets. You're not actually playing to win. And you finish, 8 out of 16 people. That's what the Wild are doing right now.
Yeah.
So Kenny, what is your loser team pick?
Well, the team is, and putting on my Captain Obvious cap here, the Columbus Blue Jackets, because they lost everybody and signed Gustav Nyquist. But I'm going to go a little outside the box here, and I'm going to say probably today's biggest loser is Wayne Simmons. And I mean, it's hard to call a guy who got a $1 million raise a loser, but he got a 1-year deal worth $5 million. And there is no way in God's green earth that a year or two ago, we would have been talking about Wayne Simmons signing a 1-year deal for $5 million. And I mean, Wayne Simmons spent the best part of his career on that last contract, making an average of $4 million a year for Philadelphia and playing like a $7 to $8 million a year player. And then he runs into some injuries. He has a disastrous playoff. His stock falls, and now all of a sudden he's, clawing and scraping for a 1-year deal, albeit at $5 million. He's assuming that he's going to prove everybody wrong and he's going to have a great year, and then people are going to be lining up again. But it's hard
at his age. It's no guarantee.
Not at all. So I'm gonna go with Mr. Simmons.
Okay, Ryan, next up I want to hear your pick for the loser team of day one of free agency.
I'm going to go with the Edmonton Oilers, and
come on,
by and large, I know. I mean, by and large, they re-signed a couple of guys, Jedrick Kara, Alex Chiasson. That's fine. They bought out Andreas Sequeira the other day, and obviously we talked about him earlier. He's in Dallas now. So, their defense, I think, is probably a little weaker than it was. And then they bring in Mike Smith as their new starting goaltender. Essentially, Mike Smith and Cam Talbot flipped Alberta jobs.
Right.
Mike Smith is older. So, you ask yourself, did they get any better in net? I mean, Mike Smith, maybe he's better than Cam Talbot 2 years ago. But if you're adding on, how Mike Smith finished last year, I don't think he's an upgrade at this point in his career. And Edmonton, they didn't get faster. They didn't get more talented. And I guess there's still time for that to happen. But their defense didn't get better, and they were not a playoff team. So what are we left with here?
You're left with a tandem of Mike Smith and
Mikko Koskinen. Yeah, making about $10 million, we figured, altogether.
They're 6.5 right now.
Excluding
incentives from Mike Smith.
Right. Yeah, he's at 2.75, right?
Mike Smith's 2 and Koskinen is 4.
So glass half full, it's only 6. But glass half empty is, if he doesn't hit those bonuses, it's because they're bad again.
Yes.
So I just think that, I mean, we know that Connor McDavid is in his prime. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best players that we've seen in, this generation, and he's just kind of hanging out there for 82 games, and then he can do whatever he wants because they don't make the playoffs. Edmonton, they got to do something. They got to do something to get this ship going in the right direction, and it does have to be now because you don't find Connor McDavid's that often. Ask Edmonton. They had like 5 chances, and they traded all the other ones.
And it's funny.
Except Nugent Hopkins.
It's funny, Mike Smith today said, well, age is just a number, right?
No,
it's not just a number.
No.
It means you're getting old.
Yeah.
And when you get old, you can't play as well.
Exactly.
And that's what happens. So, no, age is not just a number.
No. So I just feel like they had to do something bigger right off the hop. And hey, maybe they'll find some great value moves on day two or day three. But if we're talking about day one, I see an Edmonton Oilers team that didn't get any better. And that's a problem.
Right. I think I understand what they were doing, and I wrote about those signings today. And, you know, Chiasson, they did get for $2.15 million. When you compare that to, say, Brett Connolly, you know, it's not going to hurt them to pay him that price. I think he's going to be able to earn back that price, return that value.
And he was one of the guys that was good.
He scored 22 goals. Yeah. And with Mike Smith, I assume that Ken Holland did his due diligence and kicked the tires on the upper tier of UFA goalies, so whether it was Peter Mrazek or Robin Lehner or Semyon Varlamov. But the problem is, the cap space, I don't think, was there to get one of those guys. The guy who wanted to start his money, because $4.5 million, the final shot that Peter Chiarelli fired off was to sign Mikko Koskinen. I think it was like a day before he got fired.
There might be something to that.
Yeah. So that, I think that hamstrung them. So I think what the Oilers are saying with this deal is, hey, well, we can't bring in another starter, so let's at least create a competition. And hopefully it pushes Mikko Koskinen and Koskinen.
Or who can be worse? Or
that's the question. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I at least understand the corner that they were painted into by Peter Chiarelli. Mm. So let's talk about a couple of the big trades that happened. One happened a couple days ago. It was the Arizona-Pittsburgh trade. So the Arizona Coyotes get Phil Kessel, they get Dane Burks, and they get a 2021 fourth-round pick. Pittsburgh gets Alex Galchenyuk and Pierre-Olivier Joseph, defenseman prospect. Pretty major deal. I kind of like it for both sides, but let's see what you guys have to say first.
I mean, I really like it for Arizona because I think that's the perfect market for Phil Kessel. We know he's the kind of guy that really doesn't like to have the spotlight on him off the ice. Yeah. He's a very just, you know, he's a quiet, private guy, and that's fine. It's tough to do in hockey, particularly when you go from Boston to Toronto to Pittsburgh. Yeah. Yeah. Arizona, it will be nice. There aren't a lot of crackpot journalists there, which helps. I think he can just go about his business. He knows Coach Rick Tocchet already, so that's nice. They've already got an established relationship. And, I mean, he's still a talented guy. He can still give you, like, 35 goals a year. And it just seems like a pretty good fit for the Coyotes.
His passing is almost underrated.
I think he's a better playmaker than goal scorer now.
Yeah, he's such a good passer. This is the first time in Phil Kessel's career that he's going to be playing somewhere where people aren't really into hockey.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's the first time he's not going to be in a fishbowl.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Boston, obviously, Toronto, of course, Pittsburgh. A market that is small, but I mean, they've had a lot of success, so there's a real concentration.
It's a hockey town.
There's a real concentration
it's
there,
knowledgeable,
especially with the success they had and everything. You know, he's gonna go to Arizona. He's gonna be able to golf whenever he wants. He's gonna be able to kind of come and go from the rink and not worry about people, you know, questioning him. He's not gonna have people sitting in the stands dissecting his game. I think it's, you know, there are guys who, like, Arizona's not a good place for Max Domi.
Right.
Not a good place for a guy like Max Domi.
He wants the intensity.
No, but he has to have that.
Yeah. Yes.
He has to have people keeping him accountable.
Right.
He has to have people, you know, that's what juices him up, right? But a guy like Phil Kessel, I could see going down there. I could see Phil Kessel getting 90 points.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I could totally see Phil Kessel getting 90 points. And we just did our mock draft for our pool book. And I'll tell you, now, if we had to do it all over again, I would have picked Phil Kessel higher than he probably went.
Absolutely.
In our mock draft, because he's going to have, well, first of all, he's not on a very good team. He's going to get a ton of opportunity, ton of ice time, a team that can't score, a team that needs somebody to be offensive, put in all those situations with decent players in a place where he's not going to have any pressure. Hell, the guy might have 100 points next year.
That's what I call a garbage time all-star. It's going to be a lot of games that might be, you know, on a Tuesday in February when the Coyotes are, you know, maybe not in a playoff spot and Kessel gets 5 points in a 6-5 loss.
Right. They lose 5-3 and in the last 15 minutes of the third period he gets a goal and two assists.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I mean, for Pittsburgh, Galchenyuk's intriguing because he certainly has talent, and maybe being in a place with Crosby and Malkin will get him on the right path, where it also gives him some versatility where he can play center, he can play wing.
He's a centerman.
Yeah.
No, he's a centerman.
Ken is making a sarcastic face.
He's a centerman, and he's proven it time and time again, hasn't he?
Right.
I just like the idea of, I think Galchenyuk, I think there's upside still left in him. And if you put him on the wing with Crosby or Malkin, I think there's potentially he goes supernova and he scores 35 goals.
Yeah, and Pierre-Olivier Joseph is a very good defense prospect. He'll be turning pro. I don't know if you're going to see him right away, but I mean, the Penguins, the cupboard was so bare. And I think finally we're starting to see, they're getting a little more. They had a good draft a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I think Joseph is a nice chip that they add. So I'm not saying this is a win for the Penguins, but I think at least, you know, it kind of felt like they had to trade Kessel.
It was a salary dump without having to give something away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they had to get rid of Kessel's salary. They had to get rid of Kessel because he and the coach don't like each other. Yeah. It's pretty clear that, you know, that the coach doesn't have a lot of time for this guy. Yeah. So either you're going to fire your coach or you're going to trade Phil Kessel, right? So if you have to trade Phil Kessel and you're in a position where you have to make that deal, you know, at least you didn't have to trade Kessel
and a first round pick
something, you know?
Yeah. Right. And I think there's an intriguing element, a sneaky element to the deal as well, which is that Alex Galchenyuk is a UFA at the end of the year. And that's $4.9 million, I believe, is the cap hit. Justin Schultz is a UFA, $5.5 million. So next summer, the Penguins are going to have more than $10 million freed up. And theoretically, I think Crosby and Malkin will still have another good year left a year from now, just based on their career progression. So depending on what the 2020 UFA class is, the Penguins could be in a position to load up and chase, let's say, a Taylor Hall or who knows, right? And also, the Penguins, we don't know for sure that this is going to be a playoff team this year because of how bad that defense core is. And if the Penguins find themselves out of it, they've got Galchenyuk, who can be sold as a rental at the deadline, and same with Justin Schultz, if things came to that.
Right.
The other trade that went down, certainly a lot of human beings were involved.
This was a trade.
Yes, it was a trade that happened between two NHL teams.
They definitely exist.
Star power would not be the defining term, but it was a significant shakeup. I still think it warrants discussion. So the Ottawa Senators get Connor Brown, Nikita Zaitsev, and Michael Carcone, I believe is how you pronounce the last name. Can't read my own writing. And the Leafs get Cody Ceci, Ben Harper, Aaron Luchuk, and a 2020 third round pick. I think it's pretty clear what both teams' intent were on this trade. To me, what's most fascinating is what it's going to do for Connor Brown's career, because he was someone that was originally given a chance to play with Austin Matthews and during Matthews' rookie season, and Brown showed he can be a 20-goal guy. I do think he gains the most from this trade by far. What do you guys think?
Well, and Nikita Zaitsev too, I think. But the problem for Nikita Zaitsev is he's going from one hockey mad market to another. So if you're going to be a whipping boy in Toronto, I mean, it's not like you're going to go and fly under the radar in Ottawa. I find it a little confusing. First of all, like, Cody Ceci to me seems like the anti Kyle Dubas player from a statistical
standpoint. Analytics. He's the whipping boy.
Yeah, and now Ottawa has DJ Smith as a coach who ran Toronto's penalty kill. They have Connor Brown, they have Nikita Zaitsev, and they have Ron Hainsey, who's three quarters of their penalty kill, basically. A penalty kill that got absolutely shredded in the playoffs by the Boston Bruins, who went 7-for-16 in that series. Oof. And basically that might have been the difference between the two teams ultimately. Yeah. So I find it a little confusing on a few fronts.
I mean, when I look at it, it seems like, you know, the Zaitsev deal was one of those Lamorello deals just before Dubas came in, and this is correcting that particular philosophy. It was the term. I mean, the dollar amount, it's not too bad. No. And it sounds like they're going to sign Cody Ceci for 1 year for the exact same amount, for 4.5 or close to it. But it's a matter of the flexibility. And with Zaitsev, the term was what I thought killed the Leafs. So for them, it's like, okay, great. Now we get flexibility. We'll see what CC can do. If he's terrible, then whatever. You know, we ditch him in the offseason. But this gives them the chance to remake the team a little bit, because, you know, they obviously are going to have some cap, you know, not troubles necessarily. They got to re-sign Marner. It's going to be a pretty big number. they got to figure, you know, Jake Gardner is probably gone. They got to figure out that defense core.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Like, what are they going to do with that defense?
I think the right's going to go with young. That defense. The right side. The problem is it's still so stacked on the left because it's Gardner or not Gardner. It's Muzzin. It's Morgan Riley. It's Travis Dermott. You have Rasmus Sandin coming up, and then even if you decided that you're going to take another run to re-sign Gardner, again, you're all on the left, and Mike Babcock was pretty open about his discomfort. He wants that righty. So Cody Ceci, I think, does have an opportunity as a righty. In his situation, he reminds me of Rasmus Ristolainen. Both guys are first-round picks. Both guys, on paper and even visually, they have the tools to be talented players. Both were expected to be frontline guys. Both have had horrific analytics throughout their career. But I think both guys on a new team, new situation might suddenly blossom. So there's at least upside left in Cody Ceci. I don't know if it's going to help to be on the Leafs team that's already pretty leaky defensively. But the opportunity for the role is there because they just desperately need someone. I mean, Ron Hainsey is a lefty, and he was not only shoehorned onto the right side, he was shoehorned onto the top pair on the right side.
Right, right.
So something's got to give.
And again, like, you know, I mean, Cody Ceci was the whipping boy in Ottawa. If he thinks that he can play that way and that's going to change when he comes here, like he's in for a rude awakening because it's going to be worse if he's that way. Because he was the whipping boy and it wasn't unwarranted.
It wasn't unwarranted. He was bad.
He earned that status.
He earned that letter. I think the only saving grace for him is that fans will say, well, at least you're not here for another 5 years.
Right.
So I think that's the saving grace for Cody Ceci. It's like, hey, I'm just here for the year, and if it doesn't work out, that's cool.
Fair. We're about to finish the podcast, but Steven, speak now or forever hold your peace if you have any other updates. And
we're good.
We are finished. We'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.